Okay, welcome everybody. Today is December 7th, 2022, and welcome to another edition of the Wednesday webinar. There will be no webinar on Friday of this week, so I will see you again on next Wednesday. And hopefully a presentation that I did with Mark and Sam Bailey about a response to Kevin McKernan, I think his name is. Hopefully that will be coming out soon, so you can look for that. I'm sure we'll have it on our channels, but you could also check out Sam Bailey's channel, which hopefully somebody can put into the chat. There was a little bit of a mix-up here, so I am not going to try to be a team player for the next hour or so. And I even had something else that I decided not to do. Maybe next week. Today, I wanted to talk about autoimmune disease, or not really talk about autoimmune disease because that doesn't actually exist, but talk about whether there is autoimmune disease. So I apologize for the mix-up of titles. I hope nobody is here hoping to hear me try to be a team player. That's probably impossible anyways. And so if you don't want to hear about autoimmune disease, I guess you don't have to listen. But those of you who do, thanks for joining me. And I don't think I have any other announcements, so maybe I should just get into it. Okay. So obviously autoimmune disease is a huge subject. I've been at conferences where other speakers were talking about autoimmune disease and the natural treatment of autoimmune disease. I even, heaven forbid, wrote a book with autoimmunity in the title, which I wish I hadn't done now, but I did. And it's one of the biggest categories of disease, and there's entire fields of medicine, mostly rheumatologists, who deal with autoimmune disease, they think. And many of the specialists their number one illness that they're dealing with, they consider to be an autoimmune disease. So I mean by that, neurologists, probably multiple sclerosis, which is considered an autoimmune disease, probably one of, if not the most important disease they treat. Rheumatologists, rheumatoid arthritis, considered an autoimmune disease. It's probably the most common diagnosis that they see. Endocrinologists, which are sort of hormone doctors, probably the number one disease they see is Hashimoto's thyroiditis or hypothyroidism because of the so-called autoimmune disease of Hashimoto's. So that's probably the number one disease they see and treat. They also treat hyperthyroidism, otherwise known as Graves' disease, and considered another autoimmune disease. So that's probably in the top 5 or 10 of the illnesses that endocrinologists treat. And we hear a lot about injections, vaccines, COVID injections causing autoimmune disease. So it's common in the anti-vax community to talk about autoimmune disease. So I thought it was time to take a look at, is there even such a thing as autoimmune disease? Now, just to be clear, I did not say, and hopefully nobody will misinterpret this, that there aren't people who are sick, right? People with so-called rheumatoid arthritis have joint pains and they don't feel well and they're tired and they're sometimes achy and sweating and fevers and all kinds of symptoms. I'm not saying they don't have those symptoms. I'm not saying that people with Hashimoto's don't feel poorly a lot of the time and gain weight and feel tired, and even their tongue may get thick, and even that they don't have low thyroid function on a blood test. I'm not saying that either. I'm not saying there aren't people who have very poor neurological function and lose bladder control and have weakness or tingling and all kinds of symptoms that we call neurological symptoms. They even may be neurologically based, and we call that the autoimmune disease called MS. What I'm specifically talking about today is that these symptoms, these so-called diseases, are categorized or explained by the phenomena of autoimmunity. So what does autoimmunity mean? It means that we have an immune system, we're told, that specifically makes antibodies to protect us from invaders like viruses and bacteria. So in other words, if you encounter the measles virus, which of course doesn't exist, then you make antibodies, and those antibodies are meant to protect you. And the same thing happens with bacterial infections and maybe fungal infections and even different toxins. You make antibodies to neutralize the toxin or the infection, or bind with a part of the infecting agent to render it harmless. In all of that, these antibodies are made by us in order to protect you. The theory of autoimmunity says that these same antibodies, which you, of course, made, that's why they're called autoimmune disease. So you made these antibodies. You made them in order to protect you. But somehow something got confused or turned around, and these same antibodies that you were meant to protect you somehow turn against you and cause an inflammatory destruction of whatever tissue it's cross-reacting with. So these, for instance, measles antibodies that you made, or they may be some other type of antibody, is somehow seeing the myelin sheath of your nerves, which is the protective coating of your nerves, similar to the rubber coating on a copper wire. And somehow it has been led or chosen or whatever has happened, and it decides, that's not the right word, decide. It's not like they're thinking about it, but for whatever reason, these antibodies target your own tissue, whether your thyroid, your joints, the cartilage, your myelin sheath, your adrenal gland, or whatever tissue in your body. It targets that and destroys the tissue partially, generally not entirely. And as a result of that autoimmune-based inflammatory destruction, there is, of course, pain and swelling, and in general, at least dysfunction of that tissue. So something happened to make you make thyroid antibodies, then the thyroid antibodies target your thyroid tissue. Target means they attach to it, because their thyroid tissue is considered to be the antigen, which is the thing that the antibody binds to. And this targeting of the thyroid causes a whole cascade of events, which releases all kinds of inflammatory chemicals, which then go on to inflame and even partially destroy the thyroid. And of course, as it's being destroyed, then it's not functioning well. And so you have an underfunctioning thyroid, and all the symptoms of fatigue and weight gain and irritability and all the rest come as a result of that under-functioning thyroid. Sometimes people think that the symptoms also come because there's a low-level chronic inflammation going on as a result of this autoimmune antibody-based attack on your tissue. So that could be the other reason why you have symptoms. So A, you have an attack on one of your tissues, and B, you have a chronic low-level inflammatory response happening that's mediated by the antibodies. So hopefully that's clear in what we're talking about as an autoimmune disease. Now, this will probably remind people a lot of virology, because if you're going to say, as we were taught and as we are led to believe, that specifically an autoimmune disease means you have antibodies that are attacking your tissue, right? That's what we're talking about. That is actually the definition and how we decide that somebody has an autoimmune disease. If you have symptoms of weight gain and fatigue, et cetera, you go to the doctor, he does a thyroid test, thyroid function is low, he says, based on the blood test, maybe based on the physical exam. And then he does a test for antibodies. If the antibodies are higher than normal, they're called thyroid antibodies, thyroid peroxidase, et cetera. It's not so important what the names of the antibodies are. But if and only if you have elevated antibodies, will you be diagnosed with either Hashimoto's, or if it's overactive thyroid, with Graves' disease or hyperthyroidism. So it's the antibodies that define define the diagnosis. So one would expect then, if that's the case, that the situation should be, and I want everybody to really think about this, therefore, everybody who has the autoimmune disease in question, like Hashimoto's, has to have elevated thyroid antibodies. Same with MS, same with type 1 diabetes, same with Graves' disease, same with rheumatoid arthritis, same with Sjogren's syndrome, same with all the rest of them. These are specific autoimmune conditions, each of them defined by the finding of a different antibody. Therefore, all the people with Sjogren's, rheumatoid arthritis, Hashimoto's, should have the elevated antibody. The corollary of that is nobody who doesn't have those symptoms or that, quote, disease should have elevated antibodies. In other words, if you're walking around perfectly normal, no joint pain, no joint swelling, no fatigue, no nothing, and you have elevated levels of rheumatoid factor, the antibody that defines rheumatoid arthritis, that's obviously a problem for the theory that it's the antibodies that cause disease. Hopefully that should be clear to everybody. And then the third condition that needs to be met is at some point, somebody had to have proven that it's the antibodies and the antibodies alone, and we can even use that magic word, isolated antibodies, that actually cause the disease, cause the symptoms, cause the inflammation, set off this inflammatory cascade, which they say they see. In other words, it's the antibodies and the antibodies alone which are the causative factor in this disease process. That is what we mean by an autoimmune disease. And let me give you an example. I've given this example before, of how this gets confused in medicine. So we're all taught in medical school and residency that sickle cell anemia is caused by a genetic mutation, and that creates the situation because of the abnormal hemoglobin that's being made. And eventually those hemoglobin molecules clump together, and I'm not sure exactly what happens. It's been a while. And then they create symptoms like joint pains and all the rest of the illness that's described as the sickle cell crisis. So there I was in internship residency, and around a 20-year-old African-American fellow comes in, and he has his first sickle cell crisis, meaning joint pains and fever and felt horrible, and I think he had kidney problems and all the other signs that go along with a sickle cell crisis. And this was his first episode, his first attack. And so we got the story, and then we treated him with probably anti-inflammatories, and I don't remember what else, if anything. And then I asked the pediatrician in charge, how come if this is a genetic thing, so presumably he was born with it and he always has this, how come he didn't have any symptoms until he was 20? If this was the cause, meaning the genetic mutation, again, presumably there since birth, why was he seemingly perfectly normal before this for 20 years, and then according to what happens to most people, will likely be mostly normal for most of the rest of his life, depending on, of course, what happens. And he said an interesting thing. He said, well, the disease was unmasked. This was years ago before everybody wore masks. So, of course, I went and asked the fellow whether he had been wearing masks and then took his mask off. And he looked at me like, I don't know what you're talking about. Of course, I didn't really ask him that, but I should have, because it turns out that he obviously didn't wear a mask. There wasn't a mask involved. And so something happened. And I don't know what happened, because we generally don't even ask people what happened to you. But obviously, this that even that seemingly clear-cut situation is way more complicated. And that is the reason why, in order to say there's an autoimmune disease, meaning it's the antibody that's the problem, it should be that the antibody has been proven to actually cause the symptoms. And so now let's take a look at some studies and see what, in fact, the conventional science knows about the history and cause and what has been proven about autoimmune disease. I also just want to say this is not the most in-depth presentation that one could give. Basically, what I did was decided to, because a lot of people ask me about their various autoimmune disease, and particularly hyperthyroidism came up. And I've been saying for a while, I don't actually believe there is such a thing as autoimmune disease. So I spent some time this week looking through the literature to see what I could find. But this really should be something that somebody writes a whole book about and really goes in depth. So I'm just kind of whetting our appetite here. But in any case, here is some of the things that I found. So unfortunately, when I tried to save these, and they save in this kind of funny sort of wonky way, and I don't really know how to fix that. So you can't see it the way that I originally saw it. But this was a thing, I don't know, a page from Johns Hopkins Pathology describing just the basics of an autoimmune disease. And of course, we all know by now that everything from Johns Hopkins Medical School must be true. So here we have an article. It's sort of some like a patient handout or a flyer or something they give to patients that they put on their website. So this was called the causes of autoimmune disease. First thing, much remains to be learned. That's an understatement. For the most part, and I don't know when this was written. I think it was fairly recently. But I must admit, 2022. Yeah, so it's right around the corner. For the most part, we do not know what causes an autoimmune disease. That is, we do not know the specific factors that initiate the process or processes ultimately leading to an autoimmune disease. So that's a little bit daunting right there. Since the official acceptance in the mid-50s that the immune system can attack the very own body of an individual rather than invading microbes. In other words, they say that they're supposed to attack invading microbes, but somehow in the mid-50s, they decided that it can attack you in a kind of a whoops situation. Several different theories have been proposed to explain the induction and initiation of an autoimmune disease. Each theory is supported by experimental data and some clinical evidence, but none has the ability to explain the entire picture in a satisfactory manner. Indeed, minimal change, if any, in the diagnosis of patients has resulted from these theories of causation. Interestingly, it is unknown why autoimmune disease, the autoreactive lymphocytes, become specific for the particular target antigen. In other words, we don't know why this antibody targets your thyroid as opposed to something else, as opposed to possible other targets, the so-called conundrum of specificity. For example, in patients with type 1 diabetes, why the insulin-producing beta cells of the endocrine pancreas targeted by the patient's immune system rather than nearby glucagon-producing alpha cells. So there's some major obvious holes in this. And so we want to actually go back to the 50s. So what made them say that it was the antibodies or the, quote, immune system working through antibodies is actually the thing that's attacking the own person? So here's some theories of causality, the role of infections. Many of the theories say that the cause is a preceding infection, and then you can read about it there. And since we all know that that cannot be because there's no such thing, so that can't be. So let's move to the next theory. Another one is the molecular mimicry theory. And I won't read this whole thing, but this essentially says that somehow your immune system, your antibodies are made against a certain part of, say, strep. And they say this is the M protein. And for some coincidental reason, your heart valves have the same or a similar or similarly looking protein. So again, another whoops by the body. Those antibodies think they're attacking the strep, but because the heart valves mimic the strep or the strep mimics the heart valves, you could say it either way, that the immune system in the form of the antibodies gets confused and attacks the heart instead. And so that becomes the etiology of the immune pathology called rheumatic heart disease. However, this theory faces several problems, and one of which is just about everybody gets group A strep, and very few of them develop rheumatic heart disease. Even if we restrict the denominator to individuals who carry genes that make them susceptible, which of course is another myth, but even if we account for that, we still have a whole lot of people with strep and a very few people with rheumatic heart disease. And so that cannot be the cause. Cannot be if you're going to think logically. Convincing evidence of molecular mimicry in the case of classic autoimmune disease such as type 1 diabetes is lacking despite decades of trying to look for it, trying to prove it, decades, just like virology. They can't prove it, so never mind. And that's all the theories they've got. Okay, so that's the first one. Let's look at another study. This is now from a textbook, and this is a little bit older, 2001, so somebody might complain that they've updated this, but I'm trying to go back. That's always what one needs to do, is go back and say, who started this kind of stuff? So this is the fifth edition of Immunobiology. And I have some notes here. Read the opening and then, so autoimmune disease occurs when a specific adaptive immune response is mounted against self-antigens. There's no reference there, so we have no idea where they got this from, but that's what they say. The normal consequence of an adaptive immune response is referring to antibodies, to a response against a foreign antigen is clearance of the antigen from the body. Virus-infected cells, that's a myth, for example, are destroyed by cytotoxic T cells, whereas soluble antigens are cleared by the formation of complexes of antibody antigen, which are taken up by the cells of the mononuclear phagocytic system, such as macrophage. In other words, they say that the antibodies tag and target and combine with these antigens. That's the protein that the antibody matches up to. And this allows them to be digested by the white blood cells or macrophages. There's no reference here, so we can't verify that this actually happens. When an adaptive immune response develops against the self, however, it is usually impossible for the immune effector mechanisms to eliminate the antigen completely, so a sustained response occurs. In other words, if the antigen is your thyroid, the antibody, they say, globs onto it, and it can't get rid of the whole thyroid, so it does so over time, which is why they're progressive. And this causes chronic inflammatory injury to the tissue, which may prove lethal. The mechanisms of the damage are essentially the same as those in protective immunity and hypersensitivity diseases, but there is no reference here, so we have no idea actually where they got this from. That's what they say. Now, I wanted to go to another part. So here we get down to what a textbook in 2001 says is the mechanism of how autoimmune disease tissue damage happens. To classify a disease as autoimmune, one must show the adaptive immune response to a self-antigen causes the observed pathology. Correct. It's got to be, we've got to show that the antibody is the agent that's causing the disease. Initially, the demonstration that antibodies against the affected tissue could be detected in the serum of patients suffering from various diseases was taken as evidence that the disease had an autoimmune basis. So in other words, in the beginning, they said, well, we found antibodies, therefore they must be causing the damage. Just like we all know that firemen must, if they're found at the scene of a burning house, they obviously must have caused the fire. However, such autoantibodies are also found when tissue damage is caused by trauma or infection, although these are typically of much lower affinity than those associated with autoimmune disease. Not sure how they're judging affinity, but again, they're essentially telling you that they used to think if you found antibodies, they must be doing the damage, but then, we find them if you just damage the tissue, if there's trauma or something else happens, like a quote infection. So anything that damages the tissue, you will see antibodies. And so we can't really say that the antibodies are the problem. And they go on to actually say that this suggests that autoantibodies can result from rather than be the cause of the tissue damage. Thus, one must show that the observed autoantibodies are pathogenic before classifying a disease as autoimmune, exactly what I said. So did they do that? They say it is often possible. In other words, did they ever take antibodies from somebody who they say has an autoimmune disease, like Sjogren's or rheumatoid arthritis, and simply give the antibodies and the antibodies alone to somebody who's well and produce disease? Has that ever happened? So apparently they're going to tell us that whether that's happened or not. It is often possible to transfer disease to an experimental animal through the transfer of autoantibodies, causing pathology similar to that seen in patients from whom the antibodies were obtained. There's no reference, so we can't possibly check whether they were isolated antibodies or maybe just serum. Then they go on to say, this does not always work, however, presumably because of species difference in autoantigen structure, or maybe because it's not the antibodies that do it. Not because the different species, maybe it's not the antibodies. Then they go on to say some autoimmune disease can be transferred to mother from mother to fetus, no reference, and are observed in the newborn babies of diseased mothers. When the babies are exposed to IgG autoantibodies transferred across the placenta, they will often manifest pathology similar to the mother. Now, I would love to see a study saying that was the only thing that was transferred across the placenta was IgG antibodies from the mother to the baby. So they're saying in order to prove that it was the antibodies, that's the only thing. And I doubt that's the case. Anyways, they have no reference, so we can't check. But I think I would eat my shorts if, in fact, they proved that it was only IgG antibodies. And then this natural experiment is one of the best proofs that particular autoantibodies exert pathogenic effects. I would say that is a particularly poor proof because, again, unless they somehow demonstrated and proved that only IgG antibodies cross the placenta, which is basically impossible, then that is no proof at all. That is not the independent variable that you can study. So then they go on. So there is no proof here that there is a mechanism based on antibodies to create disease. So let's go on. So then I wanted to take a look at probably the most common autoimmune disease that certainly I saw, which is rheumatoid arthritis. So again, you have an antibody called rheumatoid factor, which is supposedly responsible for all the symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis. So here's the abstract. RA, rheumatoid arthritis, systemic autoimmune disease principally affecting the synovial joint. So that's a description of the location. So they say it's characterized by immune cell infiltration. So you see a lot of garbage cleaning white blood cells in the joint. The presence of autoantibodies, a hallmark of the disease, even among those are rheumatoid factor and antibodies like ACPA, and there's other ones. So these are just the names of the antibodies. They may form immune complexes in the joint, leading to the attraction of immune cells. And notice the word may form. Often you see in medicine the words something may happen Or sometimes they say it may or may not happen. And I want you to particularly pay attention to that word and think, imagine if you used that word in other contexts, what the response you would be. So just to think of some stupid examples, you know, your significant other, husband or wife, are you having an affair? Well, I may be having an affair. Or I may not be. So how would that work? You go to the bank to get a loan. Do you have enough money in your account to cover this loan? Yeah, I may have enough money or I may not have enough money. In other words, you just said either I'm not going to answer or I have no idea. Or maybe the real answer is no, but you don't want to say it. In other words, if you say may or may not, then you just said that you don't know anything about this situation. And to say that in a scientific paper means they have no idea whether autoantibodies form immune complexes in the joint. Because obviously it may, but then again, it may not, and they don't obviously know. But then they go on, based on the presence of these autoantibodies, RA patients can be subdivided into autoimmune positive and negative disease. In other words, you can have rheumatoid arthritis and they have exact same symptoms, and you can be positive for the antibodies or negative for the antibodies. I don't know if you caught what I just said. In other words, you have one group of symptoms, which we call rheumatoid arthritis, and they have either have the antibodies or not, which would lead most rationally thinking people to say, well, I don't think it's the antibodies that actually are the problem here, because if you can have them or not have them, it's obviously not the antibodies. But because this is medicine, we don't need to be persuaded by logic, so they just go on. Both subsets can be associated with genetic and environmental risk factors, like smoking and other genetic things, which they have no proof of either. And then, interestingly, the autoantibodies can be detected years before the onset of disease in a subgroup of patient, and the symptom onset, a broad isotype spectrum is observed. In other words, you can find these antibodies years before anybody has symptoms, or you can find them just when they have symptoms, which again would suggest to most rational people, I don't think it's the antibodies that are the problem here. Because if you have them 20 years before you have symptoms, something must have happened in those 20 years to give you the symptoms, and it's not the antibodies. This suggests that various events occur prior to the development of RA, in which the first autoantibodies develop in predisposed individuals. This is gobbledygook. They're just all in. It must be the antibodies. So something must have happened, and then it takes 20 years before you have symptoms. But so therefore, it's useful in predicting future RA patients. So then they go on. In conclusion, investigating the potential pathogenic effector functions or autoantibody isotypes, whenever they have to say, well, in medicine or science, so-called, that we can't prove it based on this category, in this case, antibodies, they're always forced to get more molecular. In other words, it's not the antibodies, so we're going to look at subclasses of antibodies. Whoops, it's not subclasses, so it must be the molecules in the subclasses. Whoops, it's not the molecules in the subclass. It must be the atoms that make up the subclasses. They have to go all in on finding smaller and smaller pieces until they're eventually got nothing, and then they give up the whole thing. So they can't prove that it's from the antibodies, because some people have them and some people don't. And sometimes it starts 20 years before, and sometimes it starts just the right before. So, and they have no mechanism for how antibodies actually cause the disease anyways. So they say, if we understood this, it might improve our understanding of the disease and its underlying immunological process. This may lead to the development of new therapeutic targets and strategies. Of course, it might. Then again, it might not, in which case they just said they don't have a clue. So let's go on a little bit. Here's an interesting thing. So 2.4, seronegative rheumatoid arthritis. Again, autoantibodies are an important hallmark of RA, and many data have been generated about the composition of the autoantibody response as well as the etiopathogenic effects. It has been hypothesized that RA without any antibodies present is a different disease than if there's antibodies, even though they have the same symptoms. So then they look at smaller things and different, trying to figure out something that gets them out of this dilemma that they actually have the same disease, same symptoms. And so it then gets harder to pin it on the antibodies. So that was the first thing to say about that. And then they go on to say at the end, the treatment, however, is overlapping in seropositive and negative, which would then lead to identical treatment strategies, which would lead to, but if we could figure out something that's different about them, we might be able to say we had different treatment, but right now we basically don't. Then we look at 3.1, rheumatoid factor, paragraph 3. It turns out, remember I said in the beginning that this rheumatoid factor should be present in everybody with rheumatoid arthritis, which now we know it isn't, because there's a seronegative, in other words, antibody negative rheumatoid factor. And it shouldn't be present in people who don't have rheumatoid arthritis, obviously. But here's what they say. Despite RA, RF's rheumatoid factor have been identified in non-rheumatoid conditions such as leprosy, Kala-Azar, whatever that is, syphilis, TB, chronic liver disease, and sarcoidosis, as well as many rheumatological diseases such as lupus and Sjogren's. The frequency of rheumatoid factor in the general healthy population is about 3 to 4% in Caucasians, white people, and 30% in some North American Indians. So in other words, you just take normal, healthy people, anywhere between 3 and 30% have this antibody, which, to, again, any normally thinking person might say, I don't think it's the antibody. It increases in the elderly, and but the IgG, the antibody, declines with age. So that also puts some doubt on the whole thing. And I think that was it for that. Just a couple more things here. Just want to... So this was another paper from 1992 in a dermatology thing. I just wanted to quickly go through again. For example, with classic immunodiffusion, these are antibodies against lupus can be detected 25% of unselected patients with lupus. So only 25%, according to this study, have the antibody defining lupus in who have symptoms of lupus. However, if we use a different test, a more sensitive antibody test, we can get that number up to 50% of the patients with lupus actually have elevated levels of the antibody. In other words, we're saying that the definition of a disease is a marker that's found in half of the people and the other half don't have it. And frankly, that doesn't convince me that that marker defines the disease. Now, then they go on to say, but 10% of normal people actually have this antibody. So in other words, we have no idea what this antibody means. And then one final thing, I just wanted to read the final line of the introduction. This is a paper from 2005. Is there a closer link between lupus and the double-stranded DNA antibodies? Is there actually a connection or a link? The final section in the introduction, to obtain a closer link between the systemic lupus pathophysiology and autoimmunity to DNA and other nucleosomes, we need to make allowance for pathophysiologically irrelevant anti-double-stranded DNA antibodies. In our current empirical approach to anti-double-stranded DNA testing. And you can read the rest of this article, but they're saying that we don't know whether these double-stranded DNA antibodies, which are the hallmark of lupus, are actually irrelevant pathophysiologically. In fact, in other words, have no relationship to the disease. So, hopefully all that at least puts some doubt on the idea that there is such a thing as an autoimmune disease defined by a certain set of conditions and then further defined by finding that antibody in those patients, because we find some of the people with that those symptoms have the antibody, some of them don't. Some of people who are normal have the antibody and some of them don't. And as far as I can see, there has never been a study where they've actually taken the antibody and only the antibody and shown that any person or human or animal has been made sick by delivering that isolated antibody into an otherwise healthy person. And I don't think that will ever happen, because I think they have completely misinterpreted the role of antibodies. So in the next 10 minutes, so what is going on here and what should you do about it? So the first thing, and again, I'm not going to try to prove this. So you can say, well, this is speculation, and I would sort of freely admit that I am giving a hypothesis that is untested probably and unproven, but we know that the other one isn't true, that there is no actual disease called autoimmune disease caused by elevated antibodies, or it's certainly never been proven. So maybe it's about time that somebody comes up with a different way of looking at it. So hopefully this will be looked into, and maybe there'll be some kind of study about this. We'll see. So my hypothesis is that, like all disease, it's caused by four things: either an injury, you fell off your horse, you're starving, which means you don't have the nutrients, you don't have love, you don't have shelter, you don't have emotional support, you're starving for the things that make human beings healthy. Could be food, could be a whole lot of other things. That's number two. Number three is you've been poisoned, and we don't need to go into all the various and clever ways that human beings know how to poison each other. And finally, the fourth one is you're suffering from delusions, meaning you think you have an autoimmune disease, and or else you think you are a victim of your genes. And neither of those are the case. You're simply have a misconception about what's happening to you. And that misconception always puts you in a victim role. And then you will say, well, nothing I did in my life, there's no factors either intrinsic to me or that I'm essentially contacting from the outside, like spraying stuff in the air. There's nothing that I did that caused this. I'm simply a victim of bad genes and infections and my screwy haywire immune system, which decided to attack myself. I didn't have anything to do with it. So you just stop my immune system. And even though we all know that that never solves the problem. So those are the four reasons. And I think it's also the time to stop thinking of these illnesses, these situations, these stories as specific diseases. They're not. They're your individual story. And therefore, it's up to you to figure out which of these components. Did you fall off a horse? Do you eat crappy food? Are you injecting yourself with poisons? Do you believe in make-believe way of seeing the world and think that things that happen to you have no relation to how you live or how you think or what you feel or what happened to you or anything like that? It's up to everybody who's sick to take an inventory and maybe hopefully with somebody who can help you with this to find out which individual factors are at play with you in your situation. I would then suggest for everybody as a sort of practical suggestions, and I've seen this first one work now in a number of cases. The first thing, if I was practicing medicine now, is I would tell everybody who's sick, who claims they have such and such ovarian cancer, Hashimoto's, rheumatoid arthritis, hyperthyroidism, to not mention, not use that phrase in your vocabulary ever. Don't speak those words. You don't have that disease. You have a story. Here's your story. Try to be as specific and detailed with telling the story as possible. It's a real art to doing that, to have the courage and the wisdom to tell the story, just what happened, just the facts. And one of the first steps in that is getting rid of the vocabulary that I have hyperthyroidism. I have Graves' disease. I have an autoimmune disease. You could say that part of your story is that my thyroid puts out too many hormones, if in fact that's the case. But even that is complicated because it might be making hormones to stimulate your metabolism because you need to lose weight, for instance. So your body is saying, well, this person has a sluggish metabolism and they're not being protected. And so they're gaining weight, which isn't good for them. So I'm going to turn up the thyroid, make more thyroid hormones, and that will help stimulate their metabolism so that maybe they lose weight. That could be the story. Unfortunately, that is misinterpreted as a disease. And you then get diagnosed with a disease called hyperthyroidism caused by an antibody which may or may not even be present and may be present in people who don't have any symptoms like this. And that antibody has never been shown to actually cause your problems by itself. So stop using that terminology, stop thinking like that, and start thinking about stories. That is the first and probably most important step. Then I would go about trying to clear up as many of one through three as possible. One, maybe you can't do anything about that you got injured. Two, you can eat a healthy, nourishing traditions, Weston Price type diet. You can get rid of all food that is, you know, not grown properly, not prepared properly, and it's pretty easy to find out exactly what I mean by that. So that should be a first step for everybody, as well as making sure that your body can maintain its electrical charge through making sure you have enough minerals, which is the plasma C concentration that we have. So that would be the first and second next steps. Eat a good diet, only a good diet, commit to that. Make sure you have enough minerals. That's the plasma C concentration that we use. Then I would go set about addressing number three, which is what kind of toxins have you been exposed to? And then you have various options of either water fasting or urine fasting or turpentine or MMS, chlorine dioxide, to try to address a toxic buildup. And those should apply to any situation where you have been diagnosed with a so-called autoimmune disease. Once you've done these three steps, clearing up delusions, focusing your mind in some other direction than keeping repeating that you have this disease when you don't, making sure you're well nourished in every avenue of your life, emotionally and physically, with food, healthy water, structured water, and then work on your toxic impulses, toxic buildup. That will probably help 90-some percent of people with autoimmune disease. If there's more help needed, then there are usually specific herbs. For instance, with hyperthyroidism, you can use herbs to calm down your thyroid and to protect your heart, such as strophanthus and bugleweed. Those actually help calm down your heart and reduce your production of thyroid hormones temporarily. Each situation, rheumatoid arthritis, it may be that you're trying to remodel your joints, that you haven't eaten enough collagen, cartilage extract, enough bone broth, so you have weak cartilage, so your body wants to remodel that. So it uses antibodies, which are basically tissue repair substances. That's the sort of bottom line here. We make antibodies to repair the tissue. They don't cause disease. That's why if you have more broken down diseased tissue, you will probably make more antibodies, which are proteins that help repair the tissue. They are not causing disease. There is no reason why you should try to get rid of them. Rather, if it's your joints, if you re-nourish your joints and get rid of any toxic substances in your joints, you may want to do castor oil packs on your joints, or eat bone broth every day, or take a actual collagen supplement, not a purified protein, but an actual bone supplement to help. You will help form your joints in a healthy way, and then your body won't need to restructure them. And then the antibodies can help rebuild them. Once that process has happened, your antibodies will go away and you will no longer have this so-called autoimmune disease, because it has nothing to do causally with antibodies in the first place. And as you can see from the studies, they even sort of admit it, although they can't bring themselves to say those words. Okay, I think we've got it. I know that I haven't given an exact formula, but hopefully I've given some ideas on how you can proceed. And like I said, the first step is getting rid of this misconception, because it's always what we think that leads us to actions. Actions have consequences, and the consequences of our faulty thinking and conception of the world is very similar to what we call disease. So thanks everybody for listening, and I will see you next Wednesday. So I hope you have a great week, and everybody take care.